Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's the crossover.
Crossover! Step back!
Right here on 960theref.com.
All right, this is episode number 189 of the Crossover Podcast. David Johnston and Jeff Dantzler along with you. This is the Monday edition, because we are about to head over to Hoover and the SEC baseball tournament. So we are recording the podcast early this week. And as always, Jeff from the Home Team, I'm from the Morning Show. That's why we're called the Crossover. And you can find us, if you have the iPhone, you can find us in the App Store. And if you have the Android, of course, you can find us Google Play. And certainly a lot of exciting stuff going on right now, including a win for the aged, the old man in the sea, or at least next to the sea, the great Phil Mickelson. Jeff, as big a golf fans as we are, we did not see this one coming.
No doubt about it, and this is certainly one of the most storied victories in the history of the game. Phil Mickelson, I think most any golf historian and fan would tell you, is a top 20 player of all time. And he probably moved up a notch or two with completing the victory yesterday. And you know, to think, too, over the last 3 years that we've seen Tiger Woods win a Master and Phil Mickelson win a PGA Championship is pretty incredible. And for Phil, the fact that he was able to hang in there, and you kind of thought, boy, it's father time and the length of this course. And not length in terms of him hitting the ball, but just in terms of getting worn down at age 50, that it might catch up. But he was able to kind of go the opposite of the prime of his career when he made so many mistakes that probably cost him another couple of majors. That did cost him a couple of majors. And he was able to stay steady while players like Koepka and Oosthuizen faltered.
What did Phil do before he won his first Masters? So he won the Masters in 2004. That was his first major. So he goes all through the 90s without winning a major. And remember, he was in the top 100 his entire professional career until a few weeks ago. And now he's back in the top 133, back in a big way. He was about 116, I think, heading into the PGA Championship this weekend. But I was trying to think back about this earlier. So he wins the tournament as an amateur in Tucson in 91.
Right.
So that's 30 years ago. He's a 20-year-old, and he was still an amateur. So he goes from 91 to 2004 without winning a major championship. He won plenty of tournaments in that time, but didn't win a major. And it was starting to build as, is Phil ever going to win a major? And then, of course, once he broke through, he ends up winning five. So between 2004, when he won the Masters, and 2013, when he won the British, he won five major championships, and now he's added number six. The 2006 U.S. Open, I think, is the one that will always live with him, the gaffe that he won't be able to, well, I don't not be able to live down, but, you know, he won't forget about because it cost him the U.S. Open. But what were some of the other ones? What had he gotten into that, you know, you try to remember? There's like, why is it that Phil isn't winning these tournaments?
And I agree with you. I think that's number one. I think number two is the 2013 U.S. Open.
Yeah.
He had two horrible wedges.
Right.
And Justin Rose wound up winning. Then Phil goes on to win the British. But even in 2004 at the U.S. Open, and this was a chance for him to win the Masters in the U.S. in the same year, he had the lead after 70 holes and couldn't hang on to it. Retief Goosen won.
Yep.
The other thing about 06, had he not had that meltdown, he had won the 05 PGA and the 06 Masters. So that would have been three straight majors. I think the two that you really remember, though, prior to his first win.
99 at Pinehurst.
And then the 01 PGA.
Yeah.
And David Toms on Saturday makes a hole in one. And
that's right.
Then he laid up on 18 and made the putt. Yeah, so those are probably the two. And, you know, Payne Stewart makes a putt to beat him, and David Toms makes a putt to beat him.
So he could literally have two or three more major championships. But, again, I think the way he plays and the way he played might have cost him a couple, but also might have won him a couple. So it probably evens out.
Probably so. Maybe cost him one or two more than helped win him. I mean, what happened in 06 at the U.S. Open was mind-numbing.
Absolutely.
Absolutely mind-numbing. But the thing about Phil, too, I think that's so remarkable is the consistency. As you mentioned, spent his entire pro career until he was Champions Tour age in the top 100, and he was on every Ryder Cup and President's Cup team for,
Was he on the 91? Was he on that team in 91 at Kiel? He may not have been on that one.
But
starting in 93
or 95
to
whenever,
about 18 or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it was close to 30 years. He was on every one, which was just incredible. And, you know, he was obviously been a mainstay at the Masters. He's one of the great players in Masters history, I believe it's 9 top threes that he has to go along with the 3 wins. I mean, just an incredible career. But also, I think what yesterday did, maybe it was similar to Peyton Manning winning that Super Bowl with the Broncos, and that it was more the defense that carried him. But Peyton probably deserved more than one. And I think for Phil to get that sixth, he was one of the few players you could say that, well, he won 5, that was a ton, but you still felt like he should have had more. Well, this one puts an incredible cherry on top for him. And now just the other thing is that it does, you know, obviously he's qualified for the Masters lifetime. Well, he's not going to need that special exemption into the U.S. Open.
He gets 5 years now. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to take the special exemption to play in his hometown of San Diego next month, which will be around his birthday also. So he'll get 4 more after that, which is crazy.
And you know, the other thing, too, of course, I think what's got to be a stinger for him, too, was you just tip your cap. Back one going into Sunday, and he shoots a bogey-free 65 and loses by 3 at the 2016 British. Stinson shoots 63.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the great duels of all time. And, you know, that's one that, you know, well, that would really – he played unbelievable. Stinson played more unbelievable.
Insane. And did I say 2013 earlier for the British?
Yeah, that's when he won it in 13.
Yeah, and then when Stinson out-dueled him.
16,
Yeah, in 16. He's like – how does it feel to play like this and not win? He's like, I don't know. It's never happened.
Nobody's ever played. Again, to shoot a bogey-free 65, even when you're up one or down one, whichever, that really doesn't matter, and lose by 3?
Let me give you something else here. This is what's crazy.
That's incomprehensible, by the way.
So let's go back to just this calendar year. Actually, let's go back to this whole season. Now, he has played. He's won 2 senior events.
Right.
It's not like he hasn't won anything. But on the PGA Tour 2021, this is how it's gone for him. Tie for 44th, miscut, 76, miscut. Tie for 55th, miscut. Tie for 53rd, miscut. Tie for 35th. He had a tie for 25th at the Honda Classic. Then he missed the cut at the Texas Open. Then at the Masters, he had a tie for 21st. And then he went miscut at the Valspar, 69th at the Wells Fargo, and then a 1 at the PGA Championship. This makes no sense.
That is 9 tournaments where he's 44th or worse. I mean, it's
incredible.
As you said, with the trajectory. Now, he always plays well at Augusta. We know that.
Yeah.
But still, finishing 21st, you're feeling like, hey, you know, Phil's the type of guy. Heck, he'll probably be like longer. You know, he'll be – or Fred Couples.
Yeah.
He'll be making cuts through his 50s till the time he's 60. He knows the golf course so well. And, yeah, he went on the Champions Tour a couple times. But still, when you're talking about the talent out there and the fact that – Koepka's playing well. You know, McIlroy just won. I know Dustin Johnson's been hurt. Spieth is playing well. So the stars with multiple majors, those guys have all got a lot of good stuff going on too. And you know, it just Father Time catches everybody. And I mean, there's nobody predict. I mean, nobody predicted him to win this thing.
So didn't you think though? It's been a good story, but Koepka's going to win this thing. Yes. I mean, I think everybody thought
I thought Koepka or maybe somebody like Streelman would come from the back. But yeah. Yes, Koepka would have definitely been the betting favorite. Then they have a two-shot swing on the first hole for Koepka to grab the
lead.
All
of a sudden, 17 holes to go, Koepka's the leader.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, well, yeah. Again, it was good.
Yeah.
But then when he holed out on five from the bunker, it was game on at that point.
It was.
And Koepka just, he never looked completely right.
He didn't. And I think the injury's still bothering Koepka some.
But. And he even said the crowd around the green on 18 when he was trying to get through that knocked his, I mean, he didn't say it was on purpose, said got his knee knocked a couple of times.
That was kind of crazy. It reminded you of those old British Opens.
The British Opens or when Tiger at East Lake in 18.
Right. But I was just thinking about like Watson Nicholas walking up and just the crowd
popping out of the crowd. I always love that.
Oh, that's phenomenal. But it when he holed that out, and I think the way it was sitting, it was so flat. He was on flag side, and he's so good around the greens. And they did say on the stats, he hadn't been good out of the sand this year, but kind of the group that we were watching together, everybody kind of said, oh, he's going to get this within 3 feet. He may make this.
Yeah.
That was right in his wheelhouse.
Oh, yeah.
And boy, when he made it, you just had to think, maybe, just maybe. Maybe you don't know for sure he's going to win at that point, but I think when he made that, you knew he was at least going to be there. He wasn't going to fade. Maybe somebody outduels him, and he finishes second by one. But he was going to be there, and man, was he ever.
Next year, the U.S. Open is at the Country Club up in Brookline. Francis Wee May. Yes.
Which, by the way, that's a terrific movie, which I believe is a Disney movie.
The Shia LaBeouf.
Yes, The Greatest Game Ever Played,
yes.
And the guys who play Harry Vardon and Ted Ray are fantastic. So
okay,
yeah,
I've seen it. It's been a long time. It is really good.
Very good. And the little caddy guy.
He's
fantastic.
He's awesome.
Yeah, that's a very good movie.
Phil's next U.S. Open will be the Los Angeles Country Club, and I don't know anything about that.
That might have been one of those. I don't know if they've ever played an Open or a PGA there.
They've hosted anything.
But that might be one where, like, Walter Hagen and Light Horse Cooper were dueling back in the 20s or something. Yeah, it's been a long time.
24, they're going to Pinehurst. And 25, that would be his fifth U.S. Open, Oakmont.
So Pinehurst, that's where Payne Stewart got
him. Made him 22 years ago.
So 1999.
And then Stewart died just a few months after that.
He did.
And then, because I think he died not too soon after the Ryder Cup that year.
That's right. It was
which
after
was at
the
Country Club
season.
In 99.
Right. Yeah, because that's where Leonard holed the putt.
Mm-hmm.
And then our players' wives.
We
should have conceded the putt.
Exactly.
I've had people argue with me. I don't remember who it was.
I don't know.
It was Olathobble or somebody.
Might have been.
I mean, when you got players' wives and girlfriends running on we should have conceded the putt. That was horrible behavior. But it was a heck of a putt.
After Oakmont, now this is 6 years out, you got Shinnecock, you got Pebble Beach.
So they get back to Pebble in 27.
Correct. Okay. 28's to be determined. 29 is back at Pinehurst. I'm not sure what's going on with what happened in 28. Or 27 Pebble Beach, 28 TBD.
I like, though, that they figured out at least every other year, if not every third year, getting on the West Coast. And it started with Tiger in 2000. They rolled the dice, and then he has the performance. And, yeah, it was a blowout, but still, it's Tiger Woods on Pebble Beach. You couldn't not watch. And just to finish in prime time, West Coast is awesome.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. Absolutely. So, great day of golf for sure. We didn't get to see much of it before yesterday, but I'm glad we definitely got to check it out. I thought Kiowa looked great.
It did. Beautiful
play. It was tough but fair.
I think even Lee Westwood
said the same thing. Set up perfectly, and with that crazy wind. One day it's blowing one direction, and the next day it's blowing another direction.
And there were places on the golf course where you had to survive.
Yeah.
And then you knew the places you had your opportunities. In those ways, obviously it's a completely different layout. It was somewhat like Augusta National. There are places where you can make your birdies or your eagles, but there are other places where you are begging for par. You are begging for par.
Yeah.
And if you can survive. And again, that's where I thought Phil, what he did yesterday, and maybe a lot of it's just maturity with the game, it was kind of the anti-Phil that we saw back in his prime in the mid-2000s. He was the steady player while everybody else came back.
Absolutely.
And he also, he made a couple of bogeys. That's okay in a place of that. He didn't have the big number.
That's right. I mean, he was – it just makes no sense.
It doesn't make any sense.
And then when he – I guess it was on 16 when Koepka hit his drive and then Phil just knocked it by him, you know, by 20 yards. That's when you're like, oh, my gosh.
He's still got it.
And, you know, that was the thing last summer when he and Peyton Manning and Brady and Tiger played in that that little – made for TV thing, which I thought was awesome.
It was great, yeah.
You know, and he was just talking about hitting bombs, and that's what he's been doing.
Hitting bombs.
And that's the thing. You got to hit bombs at these courses, and you got to get your amount of fairways, or you're going to put up high scores.
I think it's the thing that's happened. I was talking with our pitching coach, Sean Kenny, down at Florida. And we were just talking about guys throwing 90 in the SEC. You got to be at least 91 to 93. And he said, I heard you guys the other day. We were talking about the 300-pound lineman in football.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we've talked about it so many times, 22, 23 years ago, there might be two guys on a staff who could throw 90. You know, 35 years ago, a football team might have one 300-pounder. Now every staff's got it. Now, every team's got 15 300-pounders at least. Well, if you're not a bomber, and you know, when they're saying, well, this guy's not as long a hitter, the guys who are not as long a hitters are still, they're getting out there, you know, 290. I mean, you do not have a chance. You would have to play so fine.
Oh, I know. I mean, it's...
And there's some courses...
It's just there's some places you can't win. I mean, that's what Kiz was saying.
Yeah, now you can be competitive,
yeah.
But just the odds, even if you're contending, and I think Kiz would probably say, what do they call that closing stretch in Charlotte, the blue-green mile?
The green mile.
Yeah, that for him, yes, he could have won there, but the precision for his style of play, and that there are just some holes... It gets down to trajectory and geometry. The club you're hitting, the odds of holding it on the green.
That's the thing.
It's very, very difficult to do. So there are definitely some courses, if you are not a bomber, it's going to be hard to be in competition.
Well, can't wait to see what the U.S. Open brings us at Torrey Pines because it's going to be hard to top. What we saw at the PGA Championship this past weekend.
No, it is. And again, I'll just reiterate something I said earlier. To see that and then to have, you know, Tiger basically redo the 86 Masters in 2019.
Yeah.
And again, the class of it. And when you were looking up there, too, what was it going into Sunday? I might be off in the order a little bit. But, you know, you got Mickelson, Koepka, Oosthuizen, and Matsuyama. It's
sneaky good leaderboard.
About early Friday, we were all in a bunch of text threads. Like, oh my God, I'm stealing from Dan Jenkins here, but is this the Pensacola Open? Like, this is terrible.
Yeah.
And then it turns out to be one of the best of all time.
Well, Jeff, we're about to get in the car after we finish recording this and head over to Hoover for the SEC tournament, and the Dogs will play LSU. Tuesday, we're recording this on Monday. The Dogs will play LSU on Tuesday, tomorrow, and it's an 8-9 matchup. And if you look at the standings, it looks like, well, it doesn't look like it. The top seven teams are good, and probably at least the top six are going to host a regional. South Carolina might get one too, but they're that seventh team. And then you got number 8 Georgia and number 9 LSU, who are both 13 and 17 in the league. Do you feel like this is a play-in game? The winner probably gets a bid. The losing team might, but you would like to go ahead and win this game and just feel pretty good about it.
No doubt. I think for the winner of this one, you're probably in that last four in. For the loser, you're in that first four out. I think Alabama's a factor in there, too. They're 10th, and they're a half game behind. But, yeah, I think the fact that you've got two teams that are in a very similar position, and then you get down to, and I know this stuff shouldn't come into play, but it does, with the SEC getting, DJ, as you brought up, six or seven teams as host. I'm sure there'll be an outcry from that. But then will it be, well, we only took eight, though. We didn't take 10. Yeah. And there are probably 10 that deserve to go.
I would totally. Well, I mean, here's my problem with the RPI, which I have already talked about. By the way, LSU, they're 21st in the RPI with a strength of schedule of 3.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia is 41st in the RPI with a strength of schedule of 12. Both of those are good, but and LSU got off to that really, really rough start in the league. Weren't they like 1-8?
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, since then, well, you can do the math, they are 12-9.
Mm-hmm.
So they have been better over the last 6 weeks or so, and their strength of schedule is number 3. But again, I have trouble right now with the RPI trying to make out what's good and what's bad, because Fairfield, 35-1, I get it.
It's incredible, yes.
I get it. Out of the MAC, the MAAC, the 33-1 in the conference. I thought all their games were conference games.
Maybe they got too late.
Oh, I know what it is. Two of those wins are in the tournament. They started the tournament already.
Gotcha.
So their strength of schedule is 165. Their non-conference strength of schedule, which is their conference,
right,
266.
Yeah.
They're number 2 in the RPI.
I know.
So you tell me they're better than Texas. They're better than Vandy. They're better than Mississippi
Florida.
State.
Florida. Yeah.
Arizona, who has won the Pac-12. TCU. Texas Tech, Tennessee, Notre Dame. I don't know what to make of that.
No, and I think the RPI has lost some credibility. We started seeing that, I guess, was it in 14 when Vandy won the national title and LSU made it to Omaha, and they were ranked 2 and 3 behind Dallas Baptist. And they were, at that point, they were the two best teams of the country. There was, and I guess that would have been Swanson and Bregman were the shortstops.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, all right, they're the two best teams. They've got the two best players. And they're behind Dallas Baptist. Dallas Baptist got a fine team. I'm not knocking them, but
that's kind of,
so should Fairfield maybe even, you know, get to host? They go 35-1. Sure, absolutely. But to say you're up there number 4, or you know, should they be maybe say, all right, well they're going to be a 2? Absolutely. But you know, that's where the RPI has certainly lost some credibility. And I know it doesn't hold. It's not held in the same regard that it used to be. But you do, you know, because we can look at all the mock projections we want. You and I could sit here and study the different things and come up with one. They really don't mean anything, except it's fun for us to talk about. But, you know, for the RPI, I think that's the one thing we can look at. You don't know how much it's taken into account. And then the other things you don't know, I will say for Georgia, though, those 3 wins combined at Vandy and Arkansas when they were ranked number 1, that's got to carry some weight. I don't know how much of it's similar to basketball, how much injuries are taken into account. I know everybody has been hit hard with injuries this year. And Georgia seems especially there. You know, even though Georgia lost the series at Florida, you know, winning down there, going 4-5 at Vandy, Arkansas, and Florida. David, let's be honest, truth time here. If somebody would have asked us before the year, I might would have taken 2-7 there, have twice not getting. We definitely would have taken 3-6.
Yeah, 4-5. The problem is 4-5 against those 3. You know where I'm going.
Yep.
4-5 against
the killer.
Auburn, Missouri, and A&M.
And it's the 14-inning game against Auburn and game 2 against A&M.
Yeah.
When Georgia had it in hand, as Coach Strickland wasn't there.
Yep.
And I mean, those are the ones that sting. And, you know, obviously the game this past Friday night and the Friday night game at Florida. I mean, this team's so close to being 17-13 in the league. Should have beaten Tech this past Tuesday. And, you know, it reminds me some. We had a heck of a team in 2012. We had a rain out in the league and went 14-15. We won the opener at Alabama in the last weekend to get us to 31-22. And then we lost, and then we lost a heartbreaker, and then we lost in the tournament, lost a heartbreaker in the tournament, lost our last 4. had finished 31-26, missed it by a game. But that's a year you can go back through, just like we were talking about, four SEC games that got away in the ninth inning, and a couple of non-conference games against UCLA, against Tech, that you lose in extra innings. And that's what drives you nuts. You're like, if we just had one of those, you know, two for sure, but just one. And that's where the fact that this team is still in it, because they've been circling the drain a couple of times after some of these heartbreaking losses, but they come off the deck every time. I didn't think there was any way we could win on Saturday.
I thought it was going to be tough.
Yeah,
out and have one of the best games of the year.
Absolutely.
Jonathan Cannon had his best start since the Vandy series.
Yeah. And when I say anyway, you're like, well, we got to score a boatload and Cannon's got to pitch great. And both happened.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that loss on Friday, and I think it was especially tough, too, because you had the Tech game on Tuesday. That's two just gut-punch extra-inning losses when Georgia had 3 and 4 run leads in the eighth inning of both of those games. It's just hard to keep coming back.
But that's the thing about this team going over to Hoover. I mean, I'm not trying to sound negative, but obviously LSU is going to be tough. But somebody's got to win and lose that game.
Right.
But this Georgia team could go over there and win 3 or 4. I mean, every game they play, I'm like, well, they play up to their opponents. They play a little bit down to their opponents. They've been resilient. They've also had situations where they were ahead and didn't capitalize. I don't know what to expect this week.
I'm sure LSU, you know, if we were in Vegas, I'm sure LSU would be a heavy betting favorite.
Yep.
You know, they'll have the crowd over there, and they're high.
Yeah, and the SEC would want them to win, which I understand.
I get it.
Yeah.
And the thing, this Georgia team has been – I was bringing up the 2012 team that just missed it. 2012, we didn't get swept. We didn't get swept at 11 or 12. And this team did not get swept. And that includes three times going into Sunday needing that win to survive, which is good. Now, on the flip side of that, we go 1-4 in our home SEC series. And in two of those, we won the opener. So those are the ones where it's kind of like what you were saying, the playing up or playing down. When it looks like we're in the driver's seat, things have gotten away. When it looks like, well, boy, they're about to get the 10 count, this team comes off the deck.
So this is something that coaches, especially Coach Strickland, or could kind of preach. So who would have thought back on March 21st, basically 2 months ago, that walk-off win on Saturday against Tennessee would have some kind of a bearing on this week? And it did, because you for a tiebreaker. So Georgia and LSU both went 13-17, didn't play each other. So the tiebreaker is you go to the highest ranked team in the conference that's a common opponent.
Mm-hmm.
So we both played Arkansas.
Both
it was
lost.
A wash.
Yes.
Arkansas took 2 out of 3.
Yes.
Then the next highest team was Tennessee.
And Tennessee swept.
Tennessee swept LSU. Georgia got one against Tennessee. And that's why Georgia's the 8. And LSU's the 9. That's why we're the home team tomorrow and LSU's on the road, or the visiting team.
Yes.
It's just crazy.
It is crazy how that happened. And I think about Cole Tate, two of the biggest hits of the year, that one with 2 outs, 2 on, bottom of the 9th, and that wins it. And then the 2-out, 2-run triple he had in the Saturday game at Missouri.
Yeah.
Which that's one, I mean, after we played awful on Friday, it was probably our worst game of the year.
The Missouri and, Friday?
Yeah.
That one was just setting up
badly.
Yeah,
you could smell that coming.
Yeah.
But then, you know, we had a lead get away, and then we come back and come off the deck. So, I mean, those two-out hits that Cole had, they
huge.
Might be the two biggest hits of the year.
Huge.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we'll see how things go with LSU tomorrow. If Georgia wins, you got at least two more games, one Wednesday and one Thursday. And if LSU wins, come back here, and we're probably on life support to go to a regional.
And it's interesting, too. You know, we just the sense I get, not that we know, is that people would say, well, what if you won, beat LSU and then lost two? I just get a feeling now, it seems to me, they're just at this point looking at wins in the league.
Well, I've been the one that's been asking that.
I know.
Yeah,
I know,
I was going to say, does that matter? Is it like, okay, well, if you're going to put importance on winning tomorrow. What does that mean for if you lose to Arkansas on Wednesday and then whoever you would play on Thursday, does that carry as much weight?
That's a good question. That's another one. Again, we just don't know. But I do think if Georgia were to win, and especially let's say if the Dogs got a break and maybe Alabama lost, then you feel like, okay, it would be hard to put one of those teams in over us, even if we wound up technically with more losses because we'd have the head-to-head and have more wins.
Well, Alabama's got their hands full with South Carolina.
Yeah, they do. How about that? How about like three of the teams played in the first round of this tournament? Or what, Florida, Ole Miss, and South Carolina?
Florida and Ole Miss are going to be hosting a regional.
Yes. I mean, those three teams could all make it to the College World Series, and they didn't get byes in our conference tournament.
I know.
I mean, it's crazy.
And then another one's LSU.
Yeah.
Who, don't be fooled by their record.
They're good.
Yes.
They got guys.
Yes, they do. Although, are they going to be playing for Coach Maneri? That's one of the big questions. A&M has already let Rob Childress go, and you wonder if Tony Vitello from Tennessee ends up getting that job, but what if LSU also comes open?
He is sitting very pretty right now. Remember, we started talking about this when you could tell Tennessee was legit back in about late April, and we said, you know, for whatever reason, of the big five jobs in the West with the Palaces, out of Ole Miss, State, LSU, A&M, and Arkansas, whether it was retire, fire, moving along to another job, whatever, which one of those jobs came open first? Vitello would be the leading candidate.
Yeah.
And he is.
So that means the new AD at Tennessee, who came from UCF, he's going to potentially be in a little bit of a bidding war here over Vitello's. I think A&M will definitely give him a look.
They can't win a bidding war with A&M
him. No, I don't think so. And then does the coach at TCU figure into this? The private school.
I know. The way the private schools have shown, if they're dedicated to winning. Remember how awful Duke used to be? Then they came in here. And I mean, Vandy and TCU. And for years and years, you know, Miami and Southern Cal were pretty good through the years.
Well, speaking of Duke, the Georgia softball team beats them. And it's kind of weird. This is Duke's either third or fourth year of existence in softball. They were in Athens because they couldn't host the regional because of size or tickets or something like that. So the Dogs caught a break. Now they're headed to the Super Regional this weekend to play Florida. But that's kind of weird about Duke. And I wonder, I don't know how it goes with, I don't know how many softball scholarships you get, but
I think it's around 19.
Yeah. So can you work those just like the Vandy boys?
I think the
private schools can do that.
Well, I know definitely.
That's a quick, you know, to be able to host a regional in your third or fourth year. That's pretty crazy.
That is really, really quick.
Probably they're ahead of the facilities timeline. They weren't expecting probably to be in this position.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
So now they're going to have to play a little catch-up game there.
Yeah, and I'm sure they're not happy that they came here and lost because they couldn't host their own regional.
Well, it was nice because it's, you know, the year they beat us in baseball, they beat us here in the round of 32 in women's hoops, too.
Came to Athens.
I was like, I've about had enough of Duke.
So take that in softball.
Because, you know, that was a couple. I'm thinking like, all right, you know, that would have been a Sweet 16 and a Super Regional.
Yeah. Duke. Yeah. Well, anyway, so congrats to Coach Lou and the softball team. They'll have their hands full down in Gainesville. They stole one from them years ago.
They sure did.
I don't know.
Do you think it'll be hot in Gainesville? How about that? Just as we broadcast now, a week and a half ago, people have got blankets on for the Friday and Saturday night games, and now it's going to be.
I thought that was a little weak.
It'll be 107 down there.
Just a little. Well, anyway, they're just not used to it. We'll give them that. But yeah, going to be hopefully more than a one-night stay in Hoover.
This is the format of this tournament. And Emily and I were talking about this, and we had some friends to watch the PGA. And I said, well, here's the deal. I go, I might be home Tuesday night, or we could be there. And even taken away, let's say George didn't even make a run. I said, or I might not be back till Friday.
Or Saturday. Yeah, who knows?
You don't know.
Last time we were there, we played on Saturday.
We got the bye, and then we won Wednesday, Thursday got that
Friday off, and then lost on Saturday. That's what stinks.
Yeah.
Is that you, at that portion, you're back to a single elimination.
This tournament should be all 14 single elimination like basketball, and it should end on Saturday.
Yeah. And then
everybody
the teams,
needs to be back snug in bed.
Yeah, and getting ready for regional play.
That's right.
Yeah.
Because this thing, and it gets so hot there that it just, the stadium there, there's a lot of greenery and trees from the outfield on, but you get from the ballpark and back behind, it's just, it's the field, it's the stadium, and a bunch of parking lots,
mm-hmm.
and that heat, and that, I don't know if it's more of a valley or a plateau, both draw in heat, and that place is just blazing. And if you're there, you play 3-4 games there, it'll sap you.
It will definitely get you. It will definitely get you. I can't even remember who won the SEC tournament in 2019.
It doesn't matter.
2018.
It doesn't matter.
Georgia's never won the SEC baseball tournament. That is kind of weird.
But 5 of the 6 years we've been to Omaha, we were either 0-2 or 1-2 there.
So it doesn't
mean
anything.
We need it this year.
This year.
We could use a couple of wins. The thing, too, that if you win this game, even if we lose Wednesday, then you're kind of back in your pitching rotation
on
Thursday.
And, yeah, the Thursday, I hadn't looked that far ahead, the bracket there. But
like, well, we got a tough bracket. Yeah. Everybody's got a tough bracket. I mean, literally. Now, the other thing, too, and I know we were desperately short on time. What are they going to do? Something we could have 7 teams go to Omaha, but they're going to set this up where there'll be some SEC.
Oh, absolutely.
Supers.
They're not going to have it where you could have that many SEC teams. Just like in softball where Georgia's playing Florida.
Exactly.
Even though that was set up as a Duke-Florida thing, but still.
Because I remember well when we had clinched in 2004 and watched, I think Vandy was playing Texas, if memory serves. Florida lost in a super, but we went, Arkansas went, South Carolina and LSU went, and they were freaking out like that. We could have had 6 teams out there. I mean, we had 4 teams in and 2 that lost in supers.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you they're like, good God, this is Birmingham West now. They don't want that.
Although, I mean, they can't break it up too much, but they can set it up to where you could maybe get 4 or 5 in.
Yes. Could, like, what about 8? They'll have Vandy as the 8 and Tennessee as the 9.
Yeah. Oh, I know.
Have that
exactly.
As a super.
Oh, that would be wild.
That'd be high stress.
But Tennessee will be they'll be seated higher than Vandy.
What if Vandy wins
the
tournament?
Unless they win the tournament,
put more importance on this this year.
Right.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
When all this stuff is so subjective.
Well, and you know what? Vandy did win it 2 years ago, I believe, now that I think about it. But anyway, yeah, I mean you're right. I mean, could depend on the tournament, but it's a fun time of year.
It is. It's fun. I'm
hopefully
just glad
the Dogs
to be
win
here.
Tomorrow, and we'll see what happens the rest of the way.
And I'm just thankful too that we, you know, back in January, there's so much trepidation. We hit the finish line, and minus the 2 games that we got rained out. Now, we'd only scheduled 55 this year, not the full 56. So, minus the 2 rainouts, we got everything in. And, you know, really even into April, you know, we're hearing stuff about, oh, you know, so-and-so's not going. Remember, was it Lipscomb we played in week 3 or week 4? They didn't play the prior weekend. So, we're thinking, like, are we going to play? And, you know, Coach Strickland,
right.
They're trying to scramble to see anybody else. We got them all in, minus the 2 rainouts. So, I think, you know, Saturday when we got done, I was just – I definitely gave a good thanks to the man upstairs for getting in this season and to make it to the finish line. And a lot of people, I think that the SEC, the university, the athletic administration, so Josh Brooks, Ron Corson, President Moorhead, all of his group, definitely Commissioner Sankey, everybody that had a hand in this, there were 12 teams got 30 games in, and Vandy and Bama had a rainout. But to get the whole schedule in, extremely impressive. And a lot of people did a lot of great work to make it happen, because that you didn't know in February when the season started.
Glad we're here talking about this, because, right, we were not sure at all. All right, this has been the very early part of the week crossover podcast. Dave and Jeff along with you. We're literally, as soon as we get done with this,
we out of here.
We are on our way to the Hoove.
The Hoove, baby.
The Hoove. So looking forward to it. Thanks so much for listening. Drop us a line if you got anything you want to have us talk about. We love it when we can spend an entire podcast talking about major championships in golf and Georgia and SEC baseball.
Love it.
Love it, love it, love it. All right. We will be back along with you next week. Thanks so much for joining us. As always, you can find us in the App Store with your iPhone and Google Play with your Android. He's Jeff Dantzler from the Home Team. I'm David Johnston from The Morning Show. This is the Crossover Podcast on 960 The Ref and the 960 The Ref app.
You've been listening to The Crossover on 960theref.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.